Listen, there has never been a better time to invest in self-storage, and there's no better team than ours to show you how to do it, because we wrote the book on how to invest in self-storage. Literally, we created the best-selling home study system titled How to Find, Evaluate, Purchase, and Manage Self-Storage Facilities. We have helped thousands of people launch and scale their self-storage business and have become the nation's go-to resource for all things self-storage. That's because we not only talk the talk, we walk the walk, day in and day out since 2005 through now, two recessions and amassing a 2.5 million square feet of self-storage, totaling over 15,000 doors nationwide. There is nobody else that has more experience in self-storage that is teaching people how to invest in self-storage. So if you're ready to launch and scale your self-storage business, then go to selfstorageinvesting.com. Click on the events tab to grab your ticket to the upcoming Self-Storage Academy. So that again is selfstorageinvesting.com. Click on the events tab. Seating is limited. And on behalf of our team, we look forward to seeing you then. Take care. This is the Self-Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 16 years, has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated over 2 million square feet of self-storage nationwide with the help of his incredible team at selfstorageinvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self-Storage Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and this week's guest is Dutch Mendenhall. Now, Dutch and I have known each other since 2009, and I have been nothing but impressed by what he has accomplished since that time in both real estate and in his personal life. He's a husband, father, a baseball coach, an American patriot, and he oversees six real estate investment funds. His connection to real estate began with family, and family continues to be an integral part of his vision and purpose for his companies. In 2007, Dutch turned his strengths from a career coaching baseball toward consulting in the real estate industry, and also created the Inner Circle, an exclusive group of students to partner with him on real estate investments. While simultaneously, he grew his investment team at RAD, that's R-A-D, diversified to more than 150 people and a portfolio of now well over $100 million in diversified real estate assets, but always with an eye toward building better with people. So without further ado, please enjoy my wide-ranging conversation with Dutch Mendenhall. Dutch Mendenhall, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. Well, glad to be here. It's always good to see an old friend.
Always good to see you as well. It's been a long time coming. I thought it was best that we catch up with cameras on and the microphones on as well, because you are one of the few folks in my inner circle recently that I've been chatting with that's been through a recession, that has been systematically plotting and preparing for the next one. And so I thought it would be best. I'm glad that you had the time available that you could pop on and we can have this conversation in front of the folks. And so with that, I gave everybody a little bit of background on yourself, your history, your bio, if you will, but fill in a couple of those gaps there, as well as what I'd like to do is take a deeper dive into what you're seeing within the past few weeks in terms of the economy, the market, and then how you're pivoting and what type of strategy you're looking to deploy right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating the times that we're in, Scott. 2008, 2007 crash. I look at kind of when we first met, I think it was late 2009. And so we've kind of been through this before and we've seen kind of the aftermath. 2020 was a crash and then 2021 hyperinflation. So we went through two pretty extreme economic cycles back to back. And now we're going back into kind of them trying to rebalance or force rebalance everything from the Fed, which I always think is crazy when outside forces try to force an economy that can naturally correct and adjust and shift itself. It's never the best, but it comes back to my base philosophies. But for me, I mean, who I am, I mean, I'm a Christian man. I believe in people, I believe, and the grasshopper and the ant philosophy. And so if you go back to that age old cartoon of the grasshopper and the ant, I'm a little bit more of naturally a grasshopper. In the sense that, like, I want to run, I want to take it down, I want to eat, pursue it. But I think even seeing that as a kid and seeing my own parents, I always started to kind of, there's always a part of me that began to default to preparedness. And so, like, right now, you and I are on this podcast and we're in a hurricane in Tampa, but I'm actually, the hurricane's in 24, 48 hours. We have our portfolio here in Tampa, but my guys are out there boarding things up. My guys are doing sandbags where they need to. And my wife is a little bit more nervous than I am when it comes to it coming. And so for me, it's always about being prepared, because when you're prepared, you don't have to make rash decision when emergencies happen. When emergencies happen, you take action, you make move. And I don't really think we're in an economic emergency, but we are in a slowdown. We're on a turn. And so for me, it's fun right now. I think we're negotiating deals in ways that we couldn't negotiate deals 12 to 18 months ago because everything on the market had 5 to 10 offers. Buying right is buying right. Buying in the right neighborhoods is buying in the right neighborhoods. Good economics, bad economics. Buying right is buying right. We also made the move before the pandemic hit to get into farmland and get into farmland investing and what I call income producing farmland. And so for me, that has been one of the most valuable assets to us at RAD Diversify. We saw supply chain issues coming and we saw different things and just you kind of listen to the tea leaves. One of my investors, Alan, said to me that long ago, he's like, Dutch, how do you know what's coming in the marketplace? And I said, well, Alan, I'm not a great economist. I have some basic understanding, basic education, right, on economies. But what I am is I'm a great reader of the tea leaves. I can see the influence that is going through the news. I can see the influence that is going through the stock market. I can see what the billionaires are saying. I can see what the politicians are saying, and I'm better at reading the influence part of it or how they're trying to move things than I am almost anything else. And so I see those things and then I start to take action based on it. But then I go back to fundamentals and what is our core philosophies? And our core philosophies is prepare for the worst in every buying decision we make with real estate. Every property we look at, what's the worst case scenario, most likely best case scenario? I might have learned that from you 20 years ago. I don't know. Might not have been 20 years ago, 13 years ago. I'm going a little too far. We're not that old yet, Scott.
No, please don't age me any more than I'm already seeing and feeling these
things. I mean, you do have adult children now.
Let's touch on one of the pieces that I wanted to kind of pull a thread on, Dutch, is that you're absolutely right. It's one thing, and there's a varying degrees of experience in storage nation that's listening out there, and we are storage-focused folks, but as I've continued to impress upon them, they need to take a step back and see what's going on in the economy, in the macro sense, and look at other asset classes and other forms of real estate. You're looking at the handful of economists that we follow that have been fairly accurate in terms of their predictions and have been through two or three recessions in the past. But you've taken that to, I think, a little more of a systematic approach and level. And that's just because I know that's your DNA and that's your makeup. But things like looking at farmland and some of these other macro trends, you're one of those few people that you understand what your lane is, but you're not afraid to go outside of it when you see some of these other macro trends that are at play, that being one of them. So staying focused and understanding exactly where you need to be, but then being opportunistic. Tell me, you've got a diverse team. Is that a result of building and bringing on a team of folks to be able to not chase shiny objects, but to be able to be opportunistic in the marketplace? How are you able to deploy that strategy in the market yet still stay focused?
Yeah, it's a lot of questions in one. Let me start with, like, I like to have options. And so one of the things that I started doing about 12 months ago is I started buying land that was not income producing farmland, but just buying land. And I could do self-storage with that. I could do new construction with that. I could do condominiums. So there's a lot of options. We've done our first RV and boat storage, right? It's a property off of Highway 19 here in Florida. But we're diverse, I think, because I've always found that great people are more important than great markets. And that's kind of hard for a lot of people to understand because everybody's always asking, well, Dutch, what's the next marketplace RAD Diversified wants to go into, right? And we're in about 5 different cities. We're running pretty strong real estate in constantly. But what I've always said is if I find the right person to help me run or lead a market, to do acquisitions, to help run and lead a property, it's lots of times it's sometimes more important than the property, sometimes more important than the marketplace. So finding great people, when we were at 25 employees and we're closing in on 200, right? I hired my first full-time recruiter for the company. I've always believed that amazing people, recruiting amazing people, giving amazing people tools, helping amazing people improve, get better, become stronger is fundamental. And so by diving into the development of our people and our team, it's very important to me. And so I look at people, we're diverse, I think, just because I don't really think about whether someone is young, old, male, female, ethnicity, even though we've battled the pay gender gap thing is something we've actually took a look at as a company to make sure we're creating balance. And we look at hyperinflation. I mean, it's a difficult conversation to say, hey, everything costs my people 10% more. But a 10% raise is kind of a huge raise across the board for your team and your staff and your people at your company. But we're looking at that this coming January. We're looking at doing a company-wide raise for the first time because I think with inflation, we've kind of feel like we have to. And that's, you're talking 200 employees, a 10% raise is, it's like hiring 20 new people overnight, which is, you know, expensive.
Well, One of the things I've admired about you, Dutch, is your ability to not only lead, but then the way that you really pour into your folks, and you've been able to do that really at scale for one person, with to be able to have everybody in your organization understand very clearly what your expectations are, let alone your DNA, is you've done this better than most people that I know. And so building a team is extremely important. We've talked about several times in several podcasts, and our folks out there have heard us talk about this, but I'd like to hear from your standpoint. Tell me maybe perhaps some of your secrets, or maybe even your basic philosophies around how to hire the right people so that they understand and they get your DNA, and then how do you continue to impress that upon them so that everybody's rowing in the same direction?
Yeah, there's some important things for me, right? Like integrity is extremely important to me. Like if a great example, like if we had an employee stab another employee in the back, which you happen in a corporate world, we've all worked in corporate environments where there's the back and forth, or there's political things and those kind of things, that'd be pretty close to cause for firing, right? But an employee losing me $10,000 on a mistake wouldn't be a cause for firing. We become aware of an employee with a health concern, we're going to just take care of it, you know, as much as we can, or a vehicle concern or something else concerned in their life, right? We had an employee friend that joined our company from China, and she's working on her citizenship. So we did different things to help sponsor and support that, right? And that was kind of fascinating because she didn't have a license. And we started Ubering her back and forth to certain things where her family couldn't transport. Just different things to support and have people's backs, right? And I think that's important. But developing leadership is also different because it's hard to take someone who has no leadership abilities or traits at all and turn them into a top level leader. And so finding great people is also really important. In our company, Amy and I, my business partner, Amy, we have a couple principal rules that we go by, and you kind of carry this throughout the company. One of them is we always believe the other one is doing more than I could know or imagine that they can to make us successful. And we go to that default. And so even when they do something you don't like, or even when there's a challenge, or even when there's a problem, we go to the default that they're doing more than you realize. And they're doing it at the behest or the best of the company, right? One of our defaults that we go back to, and I think that's really important. And so when I go to my leaders throughout the company, and so like we have next week after our retreat, we do a leadership retreat. So we have 35 leaders in the company coming to a leadership retreat, and we go to the same behest with each of those leaders to do that. I think trust is incredibly important, and having a culture with a cause and a purpose. For us, we want to give investors an ability to invest in something they can believe in and trust. And there's so much stuff out there that people can't believe in, that they can't trust. To find things like you, Scott, that people can believe in and trust and know, right, is very, very different than other stuff out there, right? When it comes to self-storage, you're not guessing. You're not taking a property, acquiring it, and trying to figure out what you're going to do with it. There's a knowing that you have when it comes to investing. And so I work to get each of my people to a place of knowing, a place of ownership over the role, over their career, over their job. There's an amount of trust to it, and there's guidance to it. And there's dictatorship is the right word when you're a CEO, right? But you're at the head of the company, but at the same time, you can't turn away thought, and you can't turn away idea, and you can't turn away growth, but you can't let the company be steered in a direction that's going to be unsuccessful and take it down a path of failure. And so there's a unique, delicate balance with those kind of things. I think I believe in people. We invest in people. I remember one time we were the soccer capital of real estate investing. And what I mean is we had a ton of soccer moms and dads that worked in the company. We had people that left every day at 2:30, a ton of people. We had people that were having to travel an hour to take their kids to club sports. We had a bunch of those kids now play Division I soccer, and even some of them play on like US Olympic development teams and stuff. And it was pretty wild there for a little while. But, you know, we supported that. But then they put down work at 7 or 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night that was next level, because they also knew that their lives were supported and those kind of things. I mean, COVID's a great example. I'm a firm believer in medical rights, right? I'm a firm believer that people should be, I'm a firm believer in individual rights in general. But with our staff and our people, last thing I want to do is make someone who goes and gets a vaccination feel guilty because they went and vaccinated and that's not the same belief as mine. I encourage them, if that's what they believe, to go and do that to protect them and their family the way they feel like they need to. And so the dynamic of trust, to trust my people to take care of their lives and take care of their people, but at the same time to create a safe working environment, it's a delicate balance. I guess it never stops. Also to know I screw up. I think that's one of the things that my people understand, that I'm willing to admit it, that I make mistakes and I screw up, and I'm very rarely ever lose my temper in life, but I can't say I never have in my entire life. So you got to own it when you screw up.
Well, I think when we offer grace to folks and your followers, your staff, the folks that you are shepherding, if they see that you offer grace to them and that you admit your mistakes, because we are all sinful in nature and also make a lot of mistakes, and it's just how you handle those that sets you apart. And a couple of things that I wanted to unpack, you said, Dutch, you know, my pastor just said recently, he said, and I had it written down here, that's why I'm looking at it, your calling will always have you questioning your capacity. And as I look at my leadership role, I feel that there's times when I'm being called to do something or pivot or make a huge decision, whether it be in my family or in the business, and maybe that's not met with as much enthusiasm or as much a passion or as much excitement as I'm feeling when I feel like I'm being called to go do something different, you know, big or small. And I think it's at those times when either defines a leader or at least separates them into two buckets. And one is that if your excitement and your calling that you feel compelled to do is being met with a lack of enthusiasm, then we tend to just think a second guess and second guess our capacity. And maybe I'm not that good. And they recognize that, or maybe we're not as good as a company to be able to pull this off. And then there's other times when we need to step up and just say, all right, guys, I think we need to get on board with this and revisit it again. And or the dictatorship comes in and say, hey, we're doing this. So let's figure out how to do it. And these are the ways that we're going to be able to do this and being able to get everybody on board. And so that is, for me, maybe a different twist on the balance that you just mentioned. Because when I go back and reassess at the end of the day, there's times I'm a little disappointed in myself that I didn't either repackage it a different way or just say, hey, guys, we are doing this. This is where we're headed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're so right when it comes to the journey that we're on. Like, for a while, I really fought being in real estate. I really didn't want to be in real estate. And I even did real estate for a while because I knew there's money and there's a path to money with it. But I know that I was called to be a real estate leader. I know I was called to build the funds that we've built to make the impact we've built. But at the same time, I fought it. And the reason I fought is because I watched my parents make money and screw up their lives and not be successful real estate investors, then be successful, then not successful. And I just didn't want to have, there's a part of me that didn't want to do it, but fighting it just caused my life to kind of, I don't know if it's the right word, is stagnate, because I continued to kind of grow and I continued to make money, but I didn't take off. Mm-hmm. And the moment that you're in flow, you take off. And it's fascinating, but you have to use discernment to understand your calling, because sometimes you could be pulled by the wrong things. And if it doesn't align with discernment, it doesn't align with the right principles, then you're not being called in the right direction to be able to have those lenses to be able to see the difference between the two. And that's kind of the navigation as that we're on is we have to be able to see through the things that people don't see. And as we go through the navigating of success and the journey of success, like right now is a great example. I'm probably in some ways in my business tightening down on the reins in different ways or pressuring in different ways more than I have in a long time, because I see how great this economic opportunity of right now is. And so I'm putting more pressure on my marketing teams, putting more pressure on my sales teams to raise more money, because raising more money lets us go acquire more properties, putting more pressure on my acquisition teams to bring me more deals, right? And I'm probably pressing more than I need to, as well as I also know when I sit in my quiet time and I pray about it and I let thoughts come to me and I do a lot of floats. I don't know, have you ever floated or done like deprivation tanks?
I have not.
They're great. You should try them. It's like a completely dark room, no sound. It's like a salt water and you float on the salt water. It's something you do it for an hour and you go through a lot of journeys in that hour. And you don't know how long the hour is because you don't have a clock on, right? But it's something I do to mentally help myself when I'm pressuring too much, because it helps me release some things that I need to release, right? And helps me make decisions about things I need to make decisions upon too. And so I also know that like right now we're in very similar industries, but we're also in very different industries all at the same time. And where I'm at in the Reg A industry, which is the type of investment fund we are, right? I've been called to become a leader in that industry and to build a tight group of powerful individuals in that group to synergize and work to another level together, right? But at the same time, I'm putting more pressure on my team to be better at acquisitions, better at marketing, better at sales. And I'm doing KPIs in a hardcore way, harder than I ever have been, hitting my accounts harder, my mortgage people harder than I ever have been that are, you know, internal to the team. And so I'm pressuring all of these different pieces, but I'm putting more pressure on all those pieces because I'm more aware of all of those pieces, because I have better reporting than we've ever had as a company. But at the same time, my calling is over here. And so balancing and being able to navigate through that, I fully believe we're on track. We'll be $1 billion in assets in the next 3 years. I feel like that's where we're at. We're closing in on 200 million in assets. The navigation between A and B was the same decision I had to make when I owned 3 houses. Same decision I had to make when I was buying my first apartments or my mixed use commercial, right? Or my first farm 2 years ago. right? And there was a calling for us to get into the farmland, farm world. And I was diving deep into the numbers and the math and the different things. And it sounds archaic or cavemanish, but jumping in my vehicle with my family, driving up to Idaho and looking at 20 farms in 3 or 4 days, maybe not, it probably wasn't 20, close to 15 farms in 3 or 4 days, was listening to that calling. And then seeing the right ones and seeing the difference between A, B, and C versus sitting at a desk and putting pressure on things. You got to listen. It's unique when you know there's you're gifted to see.
One of the other pieces I wanted to pull on is you mentioned, well, first of all, your funds, they're just going gangbusters. And just coming off of a week where all week long was really a heavy focus on, we've been preparing since the last recession for this recession and growing our private equity partners and list and liquidity that we can go out to, because we know that this is going to be the greatest land grab of our lifetime, period, coming up as we head into this recession. You've been preparing for that as well. And talking with these family offices and also at events with family offices and the ones, the folks that run these family offices across the board, what is the number one thing that they're looking for unanimously is integrity. If they're looking with to work with a sponsor like ourselves, a syndicator, somebody that is out there investing, if they're going to put their money with us, what they want to discern is integrity. That's a tough piece. You can't market for that or else it's insincere. And how do you prove that? So we've been sitting back internally as a team and thinking, well, how do we go about proving that, showing that? Because for us, it's been more along the lines of, here's our performance. We've been through two recessions. We know what we're doing. Here's our consistent performance. Here's the things that we stand for. Here is our mission work. And here's who we are as individuals. And they can see that piece, but true integrity when things go awry, you can't just market and propose that. So we've been preparing, however, those instances in which we've come out of pocket where we've taken less as a GP to get our LPs the projected returns that we had promised. Or if there's an issue that arises that's beyond anybody's control, completely outside of there's just a no fault situation we have to deal with that involves attorneys, the operating agreement clearly has provisions in which we can bill all of those hours back to the fund, the entity or the special purpose entity, and we've chosen not to. And so we're pulling those out, but those usually don't come until like the third, fourth, or fifth date when somebody begins to ask questions like, tell me about an instance in which you exhibited this type of behavior. So all that to say, another, yes, there is a question coming here, but have you been able to crack that code and how have you been able to show without being showy you as an individual and that your lieutenants and that your company has integrity? How have you been able to, or have you thought about how to be able to essentially market that or bring it to the forefront sooner so that folks, you can go a little bit deeper, a little bit sooner with the folks that are looking to invest with you and your fund?
Yeah, lots of things with this. There's a science and an art form with it for sure. I mean, there's a science is that you make sure that there's more positive press releases out there of your company in a positive way. Like recently, about 18 months ago, we had a Philadelphia Inquirer article come out about us and we must have pissed off the wrong person. Somehow we evicted, somehow we did something, we made the wrong person mad. Not somebody who ever did business with us or somebody who ever interacted with us, a completely outsider. And so they went and picked two of our vacants properties, right? And a property that had what's called L&I violations, right? In the city. And I think one of them, we had like a renter for 2 years, hadn't paid rent. And wasn't giving us access to go in and fix the property and just different things. But any company our size, you can go poke the bear and you can find something, even though we work our asses off to make sure there's not places where you can poke the bear. Right. And so within 30 days, we got a call from FINRA. Right. And they wanted to ask us specific questions and related to the article, which really has nothing to do with the success or scale or size of our business whatsoever. Right. But you could definitely tell they read the article and they definitely have what do you call it, internet scrapers out there. So when there's a negative news about a fund or something else, they're catching it, which is their job. Right. And they had good questions. And I think they even challenged us on some things that we knew we could do process improvement on. Great example, like we hired our first third party appraisal company of all of our evaluators. Right. To evaluate all of our assets so that we're not doing any of the evaluations of our assets. And you know, we were following our investment fund rules that we had laid out and submitted to the SEC. But the way that they looked at it and the way they pointed out it, we realized that, hey, we needed to go hire this outside evaluation company to do total evaluations of every asset we own, right? And there's a cost to it, pretty significant cost to it. But that cost is nothing compared to making our investors feel comfortable. Like for me, when COVID hit, I did a COVID-19 amendment to the SEC to guarantee a 5% distribution to our investors to give them access to capital, where a lot of funds were freezing capital and freezing new investments when COVID first hit. And people forget what 2020 was really like when this thing first hit. It was some pretty dark days economically throughout the United States. And in real estate, the whole industry just kind of froze. And the same thing we saw in 2008, where the whole industry froze after the crash. And so for me, that made our investors feel more comfortable. And we had some investors with emergencies, so we immediately made capital available to them, right? Even though there's withdrawal rules and there's a lot of different things with people being able to cash out stock or different things, every inquiry that we handled, we made our cash available to our investors as fast as possible. And I think went a long ways to building their trust and building their integrity. I worry less about, can we go get that next family office, or can we go get that next investor, and more about the existing investors, because money's coming from existing investors and they're bringing in more existing investors, right? I'm a little more old school in the sense too, is we are hardcore advertising to the general public. And so where someone else might bring in 400 investors to do the same thing it took us to bring in 4,000 to 5,000 investors to raise the same amount of money, we've gone to the large scale raising of capital. I think I just kind of got industry jaded a little bit when I first tried to go open our first REIT. We were often told that you need to have at least $500 million to open a REIT, right? And I said, well, we don't have $500 million, but this is the next regulation for us. This is, I've done the research, I've done the homework, I read all the bylaws, I read all the different things within the SEC, all of the different rules of investment funds, I read the different acts, right, that were out there. And what I realized, this was the next step for us. And so I had to go on the journey of finding lawyers. And then once we were a REIT, which is a perilous, hard-ass journey to get done through the red tape and the legalities. And the SEC does their job. If you're not doing what you're supposed to do, you're not qualified, they're not putting you as a qualified company. And so that journey, and then I started going to the independent advisors and the independent financial advisors and different people. They're like, well, you guys are too small, right? And we need you to be too big to fail. I said, well, being too big to fail doesn't make you a good investment company. As I watch competitors buy, you will understand this better than 99% of the people who've probably ever heard me say it. But like one of our competitors, I saw them buy a brand new industrial building in outside of Phoenix. And that it was just got finished by a brand new developer, and they bought it retail. And they said, it's because the e-commerce industry is growing. And that was their justification for buying, not under market, not value add, not where this thing could make money, but they're just dumping capital into random places. And so how do you tell someone you're better, right? And without as well committing egregious sin, right? Like seriously, that's a lot of ego when it comes to those kind of things. And so how do you be humble and knowing what you do is really good? It's difficult, man. I'll tell you, like you though, we put our investors first. My inner circle members have known, and there's 100% of them have made money. Not a single one of them ever lost money. And there's a few times where we had to bite the bullet on that, where a deal went wrong or something went awful. We had a house stolen once, just defrauded deeds and people forged signatures. And we literally had a full house stolen from us. And then they sold it to someone else and got a mortgage on it. And this happened in just a matter of weeks. And we had finished the rehab and we'd gone in there to go and do a showing. And when we went in there to do the showing, people answered the door and said, what do you mean? I live here. And we were like, goodness, because we had just finished the rehab a week before that. And we had scheduled a showing. And in that week, they had just challenged. We were finishing the rehab while it had already been stolen from us, which was pretty crazy. And so that is, since we had an investor in there, right? And we just gave him a cash offer to buy him out profitably. We at the same time, we could have took a loss there. We ended up getting the house back because having good lawyers is really important. And certain parts of the country, we have some of the best real estate lawyers in the world, I feel like. So it's a journey. You never stop working on proving who you are. I don't know, like a guy comes out tomorrow, right? And he were to tell me he's a self-storage guru, or he came out tomorrow and I saw his ads online that he was teaching self-storage, right? I know you've been teaching forever. I know that you've been successful at this forever. What I know about self-storage comes from you, right? And I'm a very successful real estate investor. But to a layman, I can have that cipher code to know what you are. To a layman on the street who's seeing you for the first time, how do they know the difference? And that's really what's scary out there. I mean, you and I saw, and I don't mean this as a slight to any of these individuals, right? But you and I saw Dean Graziosi come and go as a national brand and as a national real estate guru. And we saw fortune builders rise and, you know, where they are now. We saw the Vegas flipping couple, and we saw all these other companies that came and went with infomercials, and we've seen them come and go. And I'm not even saying anything negative about those companies. They just came and went, and we've persevered through these times. But how do people know the difference between us and what we were? And granted, when a lot of those guys were having their success, I was still in my young 20s and a kid. But to see them come and go, or you see the guy who's, here's another great one, the guy who's a sales teacher, right? Who's now one of the leading real estate thought leaders in the world. And I'm like, up until 3 years ago, you were a sales teacher. Now you're a leading real estate guru. And like people, but the average person on the street, they don't know the difference. So it's tough, man. It's tough.
Well, that's why you can't do it with marketing. There's a lot of folks that are projecting themselves to be something that they aren't and achieving it by way of marketing. But integrity is one that you just can't project. It's not a message that you can get out there. And I wasn't looking for any magic wand or silver bullet, but we just know that that is something.
That was my best way of giving you a hug and saying, I get it. We fight that battle too.
Fair enough. And I guess that's all I needed at the end of the day, if you can't provide more than that. So I get it. And that is, at the end of the day, once again, you continue to just put your nose down and do what you know best. And then referrals and the folks that you've done well by along the way, you know, they are your best referral source. And that speaks for itself in volumes. And as you said, I think your tenure in the business too, that also speaks. There's a whole lot of folks right now that we're going to see, just like we did back in 2008, where they were rock stars from 2004 up until that point, until the market crashed and then they were gone. And we're going to see the same thing again, where now the economy is going to get tough. And a whole lot of folks that look like they were rock stars from 2009 up until this point, well, 50% of their success was due to a market that we've never seen before. Not necessarily that they had good fundamentals or that they were very good at business. And again, to your point, no slight to anybody else, but let's face it, I also credit a large amount of our success and our exits with multiple commas and zeros behind it to a great market. But we also have pretty good fundamentals, and a large amount of that success was as a result of our systems and things that we put in place. So Dutch, as we head into the tail end of our edit point. So Dutch, as we wind down, once again, I want to thank you for your time. And so I don't have an agenda or a last question for you, and you've got a vast amount of experience on this side as well. So I'm going to do something I rarely do and just turn the tables on you. And what is it that you would like to leave Storage Nation with regards to where we're at in this economy, things that you've seen in your vast career in investing, or to put a cap on anything that we've discussed so far? The floor is yours.
Oh, wow. There's a wide range of things in the world to be able to talk about. What I would say is, if you're the storage world, right, and you're following Scott diligently, I mean, now's the time. Like, if you're going to get into the storage game when economy slows down, when the markets are, you have two potential sellers, right, that are out there. You have big companies who didn't know what they're doing, who got into storage and shoved money into storage. And when anybody could make it, they were making it. But when things are a little bit better and you need to be better at the business, they're not going to make it, they're going to sell. And then you have the mom and pop owners or people that just had some money and they just bought their first storage and now they're ready to move out. And so get in. And I would say that that's important. I think the second thing is, and we are, right? As a company, we're looking at storage in a way we haven't looked at it in close to a decade, right? And not because there wasn't good times for us to look at it in the last decade, but now is that time. Just like after 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011 was the time. And so we're looking at it strongly. I might also say, people forget all day long, go get money. Raising money, bringing money in, right? I will tell you that every piece of real estate I buy, I say, is acquiring more money. I say every piece of good real estate I buy can help me acquire another investor. And I think the journey of money in this game never ends. I think those are important components. I would say learn and act, keep learning and acting. And I think it's important, don't allow what anybody else says in the world to take you away from what you want to do. I think there's a journey of, Scott could tell you, when I first got into the industry, I was the kid, right? Who had a lot of dreams and a lot of beliefs and a lot of hopes. And I happen to be lucky enough to be blessed enough to be behind the scenes with a lot of thought leaders and a lot of gurus, but there was plenty of them that didn't do real estate. And one of the great reasons I was always attracted to Scott is because he was the real deal and did real estate. And for me, that to me, I realized was going to last. Mm-hmm. And so in every act that you do, every piece of real estate you do, do it right. Sometimes it's a little bit slower. Sometimes you're going to eat a little bit of ched for it, right? You're going to have to eat it. But at the same time, do the right. In the long term, you'll win. You do what's overly profitable in the immediate moment. You might have a momentary gain, but you will lose, and you will lose poorly in the long run. And I would like to say that I had the foresight to be able to do things right all of the time, but like, I'm human and I make mistakes. But over the years, I learned, and I have always been able to see between the tea leaves and even see my own tea leaves of when I didn't do things right, or I made the wrong move, or I made the wrong decision, and then learn from it and move on. And I'll tell you, you have to look up to people. There has to be people you look up to. And if you don't look up to the right people, if you don't look at their lives and what their lives are looking like, if I am plenty wealthy, Scott is plenty wealthy, guarantee it. But Scott flashing a jet in your face or diamonds in your face or different things isn't going to do anything for you. It's fascinating how many people, like, we're at 17,000 square foot office in Florida, 14,000 square feet, about 35,000 square feet total as a company between our different offices. And it's so fascinating as people walk into our offices a lot of the times and they're like, congratulations, man, this is amazing and awesome. And I'm thinking to myself, an office has nothing to do with the success of our company. The testimonials, it's the deals, it's the real estate that we've done. But people, you get distracted by the stuff that's unimportant. What is important is what's real and what's been done, because you can't do anything beyond what's already been done. That's all there is up till today. But everybody talks about what they're going to do someday isn't the truth of what is now and what they've done. For me, I would just take a look at what you are and what you're doing and the daily actions that align with that. So hope that was good for Storage Nation. I reached in there.
Multiple nuggets and value bombs dropped. So once again, appreciate you, Dutch, and always good to spend time with you and catch up. I'm glad we were able to capture some of that conversation with our folks here, just to hear your philosophy and thoughts on even just a glimpse into how you built the organization that you've built, both on the real estate side as well as on the private equity side, because it does take, you're right, it's an art and a science, and there's skill sets in both areas and both arenas, and having good leaders underneath you and being humble about it and all the things that you mentioned right now. This is kind of a mini masterclass on how to build a successful real estate investment organization. So, Dutch, appreciate your time and looking forward to round two. Hopefully, we won't wait so long before that happens.
For sure, brother. Well, prayers for our team here in Florida that are working their butts off to make it through this hurricane, and every person and people that are here in Florida and surrounding areas. But thanks, brother. God bless.
100%. Thanks so much, Dutch. God bless you as well. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, gang. Wait. Three things before you leave. First, don't forget to subscribe to the Self Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram, and don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit the following subscribe button on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us. Take care.